Hi, friends! Join us as we dive into the themes, metaphors, and foreshadowing of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We are your hosts, Leah,
Sarah,
Tabby,
and whether you're a new viewer or a longtime fan, welcome to Becoming Buffy.
Hey guys, welcome back to Becoming Buffy. Today we're talking about Season 5, Episode 12, Spoilers for Checkpoint. And I'm back, guys. How did last spoilers go? It was all good? You guys get through all the notes and
everything? You're such a liar. You were there.
Yeah, guys, go back and listen to it knowing Sarah was here but not saying anything. It's even funnier if you really think about it. That's why we also were dying laughing, because it was
That's
like...
That's also why we sound freaking stupid, okay? We're not that stupid, okay?
Also, both of us had a really long day. We were really tired.
Well, and we found out we were going to be running it, like, I think the day before the day of. So no, it was like kind of last minute.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of last minute. And Sarah was there. So, of course, we're playing
Excuses.
Up.
Sarah also gave us so Excuses. Many notes with no explanation. And then I
she
had
gave
to
us
read
the notes
it
literally like 5 minutes before. I was like, hello. I'm not that stupid, guys. I promise. We are going to lose like money from that episode. Like, people are going to watch it and be like, why am I wasting my money on this? My hard earned money.
They're here for the vibes.
Hopefully, you
That's
guys
what it
have.
Is.
All the other episodes of me trying to be articulate so you don't think I'm just a high schooler.
My favorite part was Leah trying to read each point by point. And then it was actually, I think, a very profound, well thought out one. And then she's like, I don't understand what that means.
I didn't. It was worded weird. It confused my brain.
Dyslexia came in.
No, yeah, and I, to be fair, though, when I write my notes, I write in a very odd way. Sometimes I don't finish sentences and stuff because I know my
you
thought
know what
processes.
You're trying to say.
Yeah,
and I
That's
know what
really
I'm trying
fair.
To say.
That's how I write them, too. It's just usually people don't read my notes.
Right. I wasn't planning on you guys reading it. And then when I was like, oh, okay, my voice is not coming back for today, I kind of just like compiled everything as fast as I could and sent it. So it is what it is. It was also Triangle, too. So like, what is there to talk about Triangle? Like, whatever. It's fine. We are also – I was thinking about this too. We're kind of at that part of the season that spoilers are hard because we're smack dab in the middle of the season. So the beginning of the season, there's always so much to talk about because it's a lot of foreshadowing and development and all that stuff. And then the end of the season is always like a lot to talk about because you have the finale, but then you also have the next season that's kind of coming up. But the middle of the season is hard because it's like there's just not much to talk about spoilers wise. The biggest thing about this episode, I mean, obviously it's an iconic episode and it's so empowering, but I was thinking about this for 5 years now, we've watched the Watchers walk all over Buffy. And I hate to say it, even sometimes her friends and family kind of walk all over Buffy. And I think if I had to pinpoint one of Buffy's biggest weaknesses, it's her lack of self-worth. And I think this episode is a huge character moment for her because this is her standing up and going, no, I'm not going to let you treat me this way because I'm powerful and I am worth it. I sometimes think that Buffy is so self-sacrificing to the point where she lets people walk all over her. I think about the TikTok sound. It's like, you should be thankful I'm not as mean as I should be or something like that. But I think about Buffy. She really has a lot more in my eyes. She could be a lot harder on people and it would be completely justified. And I think sometimes, I don't know if it's the writers or if it's the way Sarah Michelle Gellar comes off, but there's this like fear sometimes to make Buffy super hard or super, I don't want to say cruel, but like make her firm in such a way that doesn't make her hardened.
Put up firm boundaries. Because
yes,
boundaries don't
you.
Work on television. They really don't.
Yeah.
They don't translate well.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think season 7 is probably the closest, and we'll talk about that. I think that's the closest we get.
Yeah, and look what happened at the end of season 7.
And everybody says she's cold. And
Sorry. How does that always come up in every single spoiler section?
Every spoiler section, it's like empty
that
places.
And, you know, season 6, episode 18.
Yeah, seeing red and yes, exactly.
Yes, thank you for
Let's just bring up all of them right now. Why not? As we do every spoiler section.
I literally forgot this was a spoiler section. And I literally was about I know, I was about to chime in and be like, man, you guys, like, Sarah, you're going to have to edit out a lot. And I was like, oh, it's a spoiler section.
Nope, spoilers.
Dude, speaking of red, I actually saw a few TikToks of The Red Wedding, and I have not seen the show, Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Thank you for that. I'm traumatized.
I'm sorry.
You will never be as traumatized as watching that in the show, not knowing
I knew about it beforehand, because I feel like everyone tries to gaslight people, but...
You don't get it. You will never get it unless you see the show.
Well, because I know they're really loved characters, and it's a huge betrayal.
It wasn't even like that, bro. It's just like the way it happened so early on. Yeah, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, join us on our Game of Thrones podcast after this one.
No, I will never. I can't. That's one of those shows I'm like, good for you guys. I'm sure it's great. I don't know if I could stomach it. I know it's awesome. No.
I'll do a Game of Thrones podcast. Yeah, that's a show where the later seasons I could freaking go in on.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Game of Thrones and Stranger Things are the only two series that I would genuinely be like, oh, I'd want to sit down and like pick apart every episode.
Yes. I mean, I feel like it is – I don't like the term. It's not overhyped, Stranger Things. It's justifiably hyped. And usually newer shows are not like that. Like even season four, I was like, how is this like par on par, if not better than season one? I was like,
so good.
I don't know how they're doing that. Like – Every season is so good. And they all take on different themes of different eras and like during that time. And just it's so good. I really love it.
They're doing really good with their character, like their characterization and the character stories too.
And the story feel of it doesn't feel like it's made now. It genuinely like the pacing, the story
nostalgia is so good.
It genuinely feels like I'm watching a good 80s movie or show. Like that's what it feels like with really good graphics, which is really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But okay, back to Buffy. So I think like season seven, and that's kind of what I was talking about here. I think we see a hint of season seven Buffy in this moment at the very end between Buffy and the Watchers, where she's a little bit colder, but she also knows her worth, but she's also strong and just so willing to set boundaries. Like we see a little bit of that here, and we see that later in season seven. And it's so funny because like you were talking about how boundaries don't translate well on television. So many people do not like season seven Buffy. They say she's cold, she's hard, she's unfeeling. And I just don't see that at all.
She's tired. I just think she's tired and burnt out.
Could you guys imagine going through a literal like attempted R and then literally getting dragged back from hell, and you finally find like your will to live again, but everyone's complaint is that you seem cold. Hey, I think I have a reason to be cold. Also, she isn't. She's just like prepared because a lot of
she's exhausted.
Seven, yes.
Yeah, she's also lost so much. And you could tell, I think she's disassociated. This is a girlie who needs to go to therapy and can't because she doesn't have the time and probably would get gaslit by her therapist because, you know, that's how it all is. All right. So a couple of like just minor things from the episode. I thought this was really funny, but like they talked about Rasputin in this episode in the classroom scene where Buffy's talking with the professor. So Buffy, it's hinted at that Buffy thinks Rasputin is a vampire and that's why he was not able to be killed. And she thinks that he was seen in later centuries and stuff after he was supposedly dragged to the bottom of the sea or whatever. And the professor's like, oh, ho, ho, hoity toity. Like, you don't know what I know. So therefore, like, you know, there's no way that he actually is still alive. And Buffy's over there like, I fight literal demons and vampires all the time. Like, I think Rasputin was a vampire. Well, Buffy's actually proven to be correct in the Buffyverse because in season five of Angel, there is that episode. I don't know if you guys remember this episode. I think it's one of the weirdest episodes of the series. It's called Why We Fight, and it's the Angel episode with the Nazis in the submarine. Do you guys remember that episode at all?
Huh? Guys, I swear I blocked
we
out
watched
half
two
of
different
Angel.
Shows, bro. I don't remember any Nazis.
I just remember being fatigued halfway through that show. I was like, please let it be done. Like, it was so hit or miss. It was either like, wow, this is a really good episode. Can't believe I never watched this before. And I was like, I think I am triggered and traumatized and I need to be done. Like, I was so like checked out.
I do remember you being like, yes. I just don't care anymore. Yeah.
I was defeated. Especially during four.
So it's the episode where a vampire that Angel actually turned when he wasn't Angelus, when he was just Angel, it was in a submarine and it was in order to save a bunch of American soldiers. He had to change one of the, like, a really great, like, Steve Rogers character. He had to change him in order to save all the rest of the people because, like, vampires don't have to breathe underwater or something like that. I don't remember exactly. It's like a fever dream. But at one point, like, this episode is so stupid. At one point, like, they're inside of the – it's during World War II, I believe. They're inside of the submarine and a bunch of Nazis – take over the submarine, and guess who's one of the Nazis? Spike, because of course he is. And in one of the scenes, you had this guy named Nostroyev. There you go. You have this vampire called Nostroyev, is a Russian vampire, the Prince of Lies, who gets really offended when they were talking about Rasputin or something like that. And he says that Rasputin was a vampire. He was Rasputin's lover, which is hilarious because, you know, it confirms that what Buffy said was true. That's a very long, long, long story in order to say that, you know, it's referred in Angel season 5. But yeah, if you guys ever get bored, go look up that episode because it's a fever dream. Okay. The other thing I want to talk about is Ben. So I don't know about you guys, but I hardly ever notice Ben whenever I watch the season. He's kind of like, oh yeah, Ben's here. And then I just don't think about him very much. This rewatch has been interesting because I've been trying to pay more attention to him because I'm like really curious what the show is going to do with him. And I'm really intrigued by how the show is showing us bits and pieces of Ben. And we talked about this back in the spoiler episode, but we see Ben using a bit of his power in this episode, which is the fact that he is in the same body as Glory. And we don't know what his connection to Glory is yet, but he knows that she can't do anything to him. And he uses that to hurt her minion and also prevent her from getting more information. And it's really interesting because that, on top of the fact that we have seen him call the Queller demon, I never realized how intentionally they built Ben up. And you can't really tell when you're watching the show for the first time. It appears like he's actually really like selfless, like he's doing these things to like prevent Glory and all this other stuff, which he's not a bad guy. He kind of is trying to prevent Glory, but he's doing it for selfish reasons. He's self-serving. And so the whole reason that he doesn't tell Jax, I think is the minion's name. The whole reason he doesn't tell Jax about where the Slayer lives and stuff is not necessarily because he's trying to protect Buffy or Dawn. It's because he doesn't want Glory to get what she wants, because if she does, then that means that he's vanished and he disappears forever and he's no longer gets his own life. And it's so interesting how now watching this, having seen the show obviously several times, but watching it, I'm picking up on these things, and every portrayal they have of Ben, they're trying to show him a little bit selfish. And obviously that's because he's supposed to contrast Buffy, who's willing to do whatever it takes to help Dawn and others, even if it costs herself, versus Ben, who is just completely selfish. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, Ben is kind of, I mean, both him and Glory are very selfish. So I like the fact that they, I don't know, not live in each other, but you know what I'm trying to like,
I mean, they kind of
like,
do.
They like definitely mirror each other in that mm-hmm. aspect. His home now, he's made a home kind of in Sunnydale. He wants to be the nurse. He wants to kind of like, even like you see him getting really upset that he ends up getting fired. I forgot we were in spoilers for a second, but yes, I can say that. He gets fired because he doesn't show up for a few shifts, and like he even like kind of tries to do damage control of what Glory's doing so that he can just kind of be left alone, and very much wants his own body. And Glory wants to go back home. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny how they both have very different viewpoints and they're both very selfish. It's just that one of them is supposed to be seen a little bit more moral to us, which is Ben. But in the right. end, he ends up, what does he do? He ends up giving up Dawn in order to get what he wants. So it's just performative, you know?
Well, he also reminds me of Buffy's friend who came in, what, season 2? Season 3?
Oh, 4.
Had cancer. Yeah. And it was like, you sympathize with them because you're like, okay, obviously I don't want you to die. But also, if it came down to you dying, like a death or sacrificing innocence so that you don't die, I'm going to choose the innocence. Like, mm-hmm. you may not have deserved this, but neither do they.
Right.
That's kind of the type of character he reminds me of, where it's like you can sympathize with him, but ultimately he does the wrong choice. And I think that's why when Giles ultimately like kills him, it's something where you kind of get it, because it's like he is the reason they were in that mess. And he's the reason that Buffy had to sacrifice herself. And like all this stuff is because he ultimately chose to take a selfish decision. And I think that Giles ultimately recognizes that. And he also recognizes the fact that Glory needs to die. And if it came down to killing Ben and, you know, saving the world, then it's like you kind of weigh your odds.
Right. Well, and this kind of goes back to my first point. Like, even Giles recognizes that Buffy is sometimes too merciful. So, like, he tells Ben before he kills him that Glory will reemerge and make Buffy pay for that mercy. And so Giles is like, no, like, we're not dealing with this, which is just very interesting. Okay. And then the other thing. So I'm curious. Again, another character that I'm watching this season is Spike, just because I'm really curious. Like, we know what's going to happen in season six, and I'm kind of looking for that moment where it feels like Buffy starts to trust Spike a little bit more, and I think that's this episode. But also kind of like just watching their relationship progress, but also Spike's obsession with her progress and stuff. Like, I just think it's very interesting, and so we're watching that happen. We talked about this in the spoiler-free section, but like we talked about the Buffy bot foreshadowing with like the mannequin behind Buffy as she's asking for Spike's help and stuff. And we talked about how Spike is only nice to Buffy when she needs him, which is similar to Riley. Hence the kiss and intervention. And I think a lot about that kiss and intervention, how I just don't like it. And this moment here where Buffy asks Spike to help her in watching Dawn and Joyce, to me feels like another weird character choice, a character moment. And again, this kind of goes along with my first point. I sometimes wish Buffy wasn't so nice sometimes. Listen, I get why she asked Spike to watch Joyce and Dawn. And I get why she kisses him in intervention. It's this idea she's just so thankful and so grateful that Dawn is okay, that her mom is okay, that she's willing to do what makes the other person happy, to adjust. Thank you. That's a good word. To adjust, to reward, whatever. Because she's just so thankful and so happy. So I understand that. I think like that's in character for Buffy. But I sometimes feel like with season five, and this is the part of season five that I struggle with, it sometimes feels like the writers use Buffy as a reward for Spike doing the bare minimum and for Spike doing some really like toxic stuff. I struggle with Spike getting rewarded for bad behavior in this episode. Like, he was nasty to Buffy, and every single other person who was not good to Buffy ends up eating their words or being humbled by her, and Spike gets rewarded for that. And I'm not saying this is not to blame Buffy at all. It's just a frustration, because I can see it from this point, the writers are starting to slightly shift the narrative about Spike. Obviously, we still have Crush. We still have other things like that. But I could see from like some like a first time watcher how narratively this would be so confusing. Like, it is so hard to fully, for someone who's like not fully aware and they're just kind of watching the show, it would be really hard to not root for Spike at times and not be on his side when you have episodes like this, when you're like, oh, look, see, like Buffy's being nice to him and stuff like that. So therefore, like what Spike's doing is not as bad. And I think it's just creating this weird pattern, especially for when we get to season six and we have Buffy telling Spike no, and Spike being like, well, we're just gonna have sex anyway, like you don't actually mean it or whatever. So I don't know, I just kind of struggle with that, and I'm gonna struggle with that in intervention when she kisses him, and yeah, just gives me the ick, honestly.
Agreed.
All right, so let's talk about the Watchers. So this is the second to last time that we will see the Watchers, specifically Quentin and Lydia and the rest of the guys there. So the next time we see them, they will be blown up along with the rest of the Watchers in season seven's Never Woo! Leave Me.
I wish you had like a little sound effect of applause.
Yay! I find it so interesting. So I actually went back and watched that scene with the Watchers in that episode just to kind of like get a glimpse of like because I don't remember it very much. I'm like, okay, to have the Watchers changed very much and how they view Buffy and how they view Giles and all that stuff. No, guys, up until the very end, the Watchers believe they still have the power and they underestimate the first evil and even Buffy. Like, Quentin gets off the phone with Buffy and she's asking him where Giles is because she thinks that Giles might be dead. And he's like, well, we don't keep tabs on all of our Watchers once we let them go. And she's like, yeah, okay, no, I know you know how to find him. And he was like, all right, well, we'll see what I can do, whatever. And then he hangs up and then he tells everybody, oh, she doesn't know anything either. So he was like pretending and pumping her for information, which is just crappy. But also, I was thinking about this today too. Okay, so do you remember, guys, how season 7 begins with a bunch of slayers or potentials around the world being slaughtered? And I think that's so funny. Like, it wasn't till towards the very end of season 7 that – and that's when you have Caleb that the Watchers' Council is blown up. So even the first evil recognizes that the real power is actually the potentials and the slayers, not the Watchers' Council, which I thought was really funny. Also, I thought it was really interesting that season 7 is about power. Like, the entire theme of season 7 is power. And this episode deals heavily with that idea.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah, it was very season 7 themed.
Yes. Yeah. Even like, and I know I talked about this earlier, but like, even like the way that Buffy acts and stuff, it feels like season 7 Buffy in a lot of ways.
And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like people saying that they don't like Buffy season 7. I'm like, okay, so you want a woman who's seemingly in her own and powerful, but a way that's palatable to you. If this was a male lead in season 7, yeah, you wouldn't care. Yeah. But it's the fact that she's not, like Sarah says, she's not bending over backwards for people. She's making decisions. And even she's having a healthy mindset. I know this is going to sound harsh, but having like a bit more of a realistic mindset about what war is. She's understanding mm-hmm. that there's going to be casualties. And everyone knows that. And yet she gets blamed for the casualties when it's like, hey, you're a potential slayer. This is what you have to do, and it's not her responsibility if they end up dying. Like, it's like, it's not her choice, it's not her decision. Like, and her kind of like being resolute about that and knowing that, like, obviously, like, deaths are a big deal and she knows that, but it's like she can't save everybody and she's learned that over the years. And at some point, like, that's what war is, you know. And everyone got really mad, like, at her.
People get mad at her as if she asked to be the leader of potentials, as if yeah. she wasn't herself a potential that got chosen at 16. Like, 15. Her life is at risk just as much as all those girls are, if not more, because she's mm-hmm. more of a target. And yet they still get mad at her. Oh my God. I don't even want to talk about it.
It's the fact that she is the one that's the easiest to target because she's the one that's training them. But it's like, I can't imagine that being the case, kicking out somebody if it were a man. And this is not me trying to be like crazy a feminist for saying that, but it's like, genuinely think about a man being in his own home. Do you think people would kick him out of his own home if they disagreed with his abilities?
Well, okay. We have a great, great example, guys. Season 5 Angel. You never hear people say that about Angel. I just don't like how,
especially his season 2 shenanigans.
Yeah,
had his right. soul.
Right. I mean, people are like, oh, this is compelling stuff. This is so good. And I think, to be fair, I can hear everyone yelling at me right now. The way that Buffy started out, Buffy was a happy-go-lucky teenager and like all this stuff. And Angel has always been dark and broody. So yes, I understand that like there's been
but
this.
But also Buffy's is a coming of age story. Like Angel was She's already not look of the age. Same. Yeah. Do you look the same as when like, you were a sophomore like Buffy, in high school? I don't think so.
They're like, Buffy, we understand that you're under a lot of pressure and that you're like our leader and everything. But if
but
you
go
could
shopping.
Smile more. While you're like telling us to do stuff, like that'd be really great. Maybe we would actually like perform better and have like a better outcome in the war if you would just like be a little bit like nicer about like how you give us instructions and smile more.
Right. Seriously.
Your vibe like wasn't as like stressed. Yeah.
As Buffy's literally bearing potentials.
She's giving a speech where she's like battered and bruised and bleeding out of the lip. And like, you know, the whatever that episode is where she like fought the
Oh, bring Uber, on the night.
The Uber vamp.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, Puffy, you don't look so good. Like, I'm not hearing you. You just kind of seem a little tired. Like, maybe you should, like, smile.
And that's why I don't, like, mean to bring this up every time, but I feel like it's relevant, especially for this episode. That's why it's so hard to see how Giles treats her in season 7, especially after this episode, because this is a good example of Giles backing her and seeing her and recognizing that she is powerful. She has the authority. She has the power. But also Buffy deferring to Giles as well, too. Like, at one point she asks him, like, can I hit Quentin? Like, she's still looking to him for approval and advice and stuff, even as she knows who she is. And Giles, as soon as she, like, takes charge, takes a step back. I just don't understand why they had to make him have such an issue with power in season 7. Like, I will never understand it, guys.
Season 7 Giles is just so out of character. I don't get it. And you know what sucks, too, is, like, the further we get along in the series, the more that I'm reminded of how the relationship will become. Yeah. Like, in the earlier seasons, it's, like, not even on my brain. I'm like, there's so many moments and episodes that are just, like, attributed to their relationship. And then the further we get to, or closer we get to season 7, it's like creeping up on me. It's like, I'm like trying to look for the last time they'll have a good moment.
Yeah.
Because in this episode, I was like, oh, there's such good moments between Buffy and Giles. And my brain goes straight towards, when will the last one be?
Oh, that's so sad. No,
literally,
sad.
Because we never get that moment. We never get that last moment of reconciliation. And honestly, it's such a
You get
slap
a smile
in the face.
And a nod, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no moment between them in season
7. Honestly,
seven,
it's so triggering. Mm-hmm. Oh, like, can someone communicate that they love you, please?
The worst part is there was no point to it, because remember in season 7 they had that whole storyline where you think that Giles is the first because you think that he got killed. And so for like 5-6 episodes, they don't have Giles touch anyone, so he doesn't hug Buffy. She goes to hug him, but he like kind of turns away a little bit to throw you off.
Well, I also think what's crazier is I would have preferred that if Giles had died and it was the first. It would have made more logical sense for his character.
Right. Yeah. I know. And then you find out that he's actually just Giles, and you're like, well, what was the point of that?
Or he ends up actually dying at the grave, season 6 finale. Yeah. Like, if he just ended up dying then, that would suck, yes. But, like, honestly, they bring him back for what? Like, no, there's no good reason in hindsight for him being here in season 7.
Yep, I agree. All right. Well, to wrap it up... what I was saying earlier about like the whole idea of season 7 being about power and stuff, I love the idea. I mean, I don't relish in anyone's death really unless they're Warren or Kennedy, but unfortunately we don't get to see that. We're not graced with that on the screen. Like how I brought Kennedy in there, guys. Yeah, I do. I'm like patting myself on
the back
here.
It's always Kennedy and the forbidden episode Kennedy, that gets brought up.
Got to bring in Kennedy, man. I am excited for season 7 just to crap on Kennedy. Every single episode, I'm just going to be like, shut up, Kennedy! What I will say, though, is the Watchers Council exploding and being completely wrecked, even though it was Caleb and not necessarily anybody else, I think was one of the best storylines to happen, because we think about reparations. We think about some institutions. There is no saving that institution. You literally have to raise it to the ground and start over, build a new foundation, everything. And with the Watchers, as long as they are in power and they are still around, there is no possible way that they could have rebuilt and revamped everything with the Slayers. Like, I mean, could you imagine if the Watchers Council finds out that there is now hundreds of Slayers? I mean, they probably would have had heart attacks, but they probably would have figured out a way to weaponize and be like, well, now we have a whole army. You know what I mean? Like, now we're going to find a way to harness them. And or, hey, now they're even more disposable than they were before because there's so many of them to pick from. The Watchers Council really needed to be started over from the ground up by someone who understood it from the other side. And that's why I really love that Buffy takes over for that. And also, the last, and I'm always going to come back to this, but again, this episode dealing with the topic of power, Buffy sharing the power with all the Slayers is reflected here in this episode. Not only is she refusing to play along with the ridiculous and archaic rules of the Watchers, but she's literally changing the rules on them. She's also validating every single one of member of her team, like we talked about before, and not just taking all the glory for herself. And she's going to do the same thing in Chosen. And season 7, the lessons, the very first episode, you have Buffy training Dawn, and she says it's about power. Who's got it? And who knows how to use it? And that second bit is very important, because you could have power, but if you don't know how to use it, you're not in full control of yourself. And so Buffy, by her saying it's about power, who's got it, who knows how to use it? Who knows how to use it? The Watchers do. And so the Slayers will never be in full power if they do not have the knowledge to back that power. And so what Buffy does by the end of the series and by the end of Chosen is she now has full knowledge as well as the power, and she's able to go and teach it to other people. And I just, I think that's so cool. So, all right, my little speech is done, my little soapbox. Wow, and I said there wasn't much to talk about this episode. Look at that.
Always. I don't even listen to that part when Sarah says it. I'm like, sure. Likely story.
Well, I was cracking up because you guys were like, are there always this many notes every single week? I was like, yeah, yes. So glad to know you guys are paying so much attention. Warms my heart. All right, guys, we hope you enjoyed that. We hope you learned something new. If we missed anything, guys, definitely let us know. I always love learning new things.
Do people
let
us know if we miss anything?
Yeah, every once in a while I'll get DMs.
That's a little,
but I usually don't miss anything, so.
Okay, yeah. I actually believe that. I've seen the notes. I actually believe that.
Yeah, people will email us and stuff. A lot of times it's people like a year later because they'll be behind. And so they'll listen and they'll just DM me and I'll be like, dude, I don't remember what I said like 2 years ago. Like they'll just expect me to know which episode they're on. And I'm like,
I hate when people reference like our beginning stuff. I'm like, that doesn't represent me. That's a different topic.
Anytime someone starts the podcast, I was like, I apologize for the first two seasons because we were still learning.
Well, no, the second season's fine. The first season, I don't know her. I don't listen to her. I actually don't listen to her episodes in general. But like, no.
All right, guys, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Let us know your thoughts. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Tumblr at Becoming Buffy Podcast. And you can email us at becomingbuffypodcast@gmail.com. Speaking of which, special shout out and thank you to our producers, Christine, CJ, Kate, Omri, Paul, and Cashan. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, and we will talk to you all next time.